KLN 88.1 FM, broadcasting out of Ryerson University in Toronto. My name is Susie Alvarez, and you're tuning into Word of Mouth News for this Friday, May the 14th.
And on tonight's show, we're going to be joined at 6:30 by Don Whites, who, of course, will be reporting back from last weekend's Psych Out Conference on Anti-Psychiatry Radio, his regular feature. Before that, at 6:15 or so, we'll be playing some of a speech by Bob Lovelace, the retired chief of the Arduk Algonquin First Nation in Eastern Ontario. And he was speaking last week about his experience in Cochabamba, Bolivia, where he attended the World People's Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth. But before we get into all of that,
we have headlines, and this come to us thanks in part to Democracy Now! And Al Jazeera English. And we will begin with environmental news. The Center for Biological Diversity has announced plans to sue U.S. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar for ignoring marine mammal protection laws when approving offshore drilling operations. Since Salazar took office, the Department of the Interior in the United States has approved 3 lease sales, more than 100 seismic surveys, and more than 300 drilling operations without permits required by the Marine Mammal Protection Act and the Endangered Species Act.
Marine scientists say that the massive oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico may be far larger than projected. BP has estimated 5,000 barrels of oil are leaking into the Gulf every day. But a new analysis by Professor Steve Warily at Purdue University estimates the actual leak may be spewing about 70,000 barrels of oil a day, the equivalent of an Exxon Valdez disaster every 4 days. Warily's estimate was based in part on the 30-second video BP released on Wednesday showing oil gushing from a pipe on the ocean floor.
And in war and occupation news, NATO-led forces have been accused of killing between 9 and 15 Afghan civilians in an overnight raid near the city of Jalalabad. Earlier today, hundreds of Afghans set fire to tires and blocked streets to protest the killings.
And back in the United States, U.S. President Barack Obama has asked Congress for $205 million to help Israel speed up construction of a new short-range anti-missile defense system. The so-called Iron Dome project is designed to intercept rockets and artillery shells from the Gaza Strip and neighboring Lebanon. The money would come in addition to annual U.S. assistance to Israel. According to State Department figures, U.S. military aid to Israel in 2009 totaled $2.55 billion. If approved, this aid package would increase U.S. funding to the Israeli military complex to $3 billion in 2011.
And in Thailand, troops have fired live rounds at anti-government protesters as clashes intensify in the streets of Bangkok. At least 2 people have reportedly died, and 2 journalists have been shot. Thai troops are attempting to reclaim parts of the city center, which have been turned into a camp by the protesters known as the Red Shirts. Authorities have cut off water and electricity to the protesters' sprawling camp. Tension in Thailand has increased markedly over the past 24 hours. Yesterday, a renegade Thai general who leads the Red Shirt movement was shot in the head by a sniper while giving an interview with the New York Times. He is now on life support.
In news from Latin America, lawmakers in Ecuador have postponed a vote on a controversial water bill that sparked protests by indigenous groups and other organizations. Ecuador's President Rafael Correa says the bill is needed to better regulate the nation's water system. But opponents fear the water bill would pave the way for privatization of natural resources and make it easier for the government to make concessions to mining companies and large industries. Earlier this week, indigenous groups blockaded roads in several regions. the police responded with tear gas and arrests.
And in arts, culture, and politics news, another prominent Latino hip-hop artist has canceled an upcoming performance in Arizona. The rapper Pitbull said Thursday his May 31st show in Phoenix was off because of the state's new anti-immigrant law. Earlier this week, the group Cypress Hill canceled a concert in Tucson. And today, a group of religious leaders from the state opposing the law traveled to Washington to lobby for a federal law on illegal immigration to overturn the controversial Arizona legislation. However, Al Jazeera reports that an opinion poll conducted this week suggests that many in the U.S. who were polled supported the state's strict new measures, which allow police to stop suspected illegal immigrants and ask them for proof of citizenship. Opponents of the legislation say it will result in racial profiling and false arrest, particularly within Latino communities. Critics also argue it may lead to racially motivated violence.
And in local and immigration-related news, alerts have been widely circulated this week informing that immigration officers are stopping and asking people for documents at Dufferin Mall and along the St. Clair West Avenue stretch. No One Is Illegal Toronto reported on their website that last Friday, immigration enforcement raided Dufferin Mall in a first of a series of anti-migrant attacks. Over 2,000 persons found to be, quote, without adequate documentation have been arrested. Currently, these people are being detained at the Immigration Detention Holding Center without access to full legal support. It appears that immigration enforcement is stopping people on the streets, at work, and while shopping based on their skin color and accent. Latin American establishments such as food shops and restaurants were targeted during this afternoon's raid along St. Clair Avenue West. No One Is Illegal Toronto believes that further raids will be carried out in the coming days and may be focused along Bloor Street. If you see immigration enforcement or police asking for identification or detaining people, or if you have information about the raids that took place on May the 7th, please contact No One Is Illegal at riseup.net or 416-883-6137. That's 416-833-6137. For more information, visit toronto.nooneisillegal.org.
And I think that does it for the headlines for tonight's show. We're going to go to a quick musical break, and we'll be back with Robert Lovelace speaking about his experience in Cochabamba.
Is revolutionary music from Bolivia, where we go next on tonight's show. This is Word of Mouth News on CKLN 88.1 FM. It is 6:12 in the PM. April the 19th to the 22nd, tens of thousands, 30 to 35,000 people gathered in Cochabamba, Bolivia for the World People's Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth. The conference was convened by Bolivian President Evo Morales after the disastrous UN climate change conference held in December in Copenhagen. And there were a number of people from different community groups and non-governmental organizations all over the world attended, 120 countries apparently. Among them was Robert Lovelace. He is the retired chief of the Arduk Algonquin First Nation in Eastern Ontario, best known outside of his community, I think, for going to jail for 6 months because of his opposition to uranium mining on his people's traditional territory, just north of the Kingston area. And he attended, and last Friday he reported back at an event at the Steelworkers Hall. Very well attended event. The hall was packed. A lot of interest in what happened in Cochabamba, and what, because of course this is the hope that there is, if there is any, to stop climate change and to install a more equitable and a more sustainable course of development in the world today. So we go now to an excerpt from his presentation. He begins by talking about the speech that was made by Evo Morales to open the conference.
Kwe kwe, aninichi pamadazin, kekekwe ninijnikaz. Hola, buenas noches. And he said, what fool. People were fighting for this. Genius of what it is to be human and to serve ourselves. And then he held up a styrofoam plate, and he said, what fool. What kind of fool would change this for this? He did the same thing with a piece of fabric, with cloth that was used for a poncho. He showed, he had someone pour water into it, and he showed how a traditional poncho is waterproof. And then he held up a plastic raincoat, and he said, you know, what kind of fool would change this type of life for this type of life? He made his point really well. He's an eloquent speaker. And one of the things that Evo Morales has said that I've been talking about probably for a couple of years now, and it struck me as really, really important. And that is that there are all human beings are native people. In Bolivia, he refers to the people, the millennial natives that have been there for over 1,000 years, and the new natives. And this is an important concept in terms of sustainability, and in terms of the way that we need to go in our lives. For most of my life as an indigenous person, I saw myself as separate from the rest of humanity. But I've begun to realize that I'm not. And that in order to save the world that we live in order to progress and to find sustainable ways of living, every individual on this planet has to form an indigenous relationship with the earth. We have to learn that it is our mother and that it is a female, and that we need to live in respect of this Mother Earth. And that is something that indigenous people know intrinsically and inherently. And that's something that we need to all look at, is finding our own indigeneity in the air that we breathe, in the soil that we till, in the water that we drink. It took Evo Morales to call a world conference, a world people's conference. It was very different. There was a couple of things that were interesting to me. One of the things was the absence of certain groups of people. Not all people came to the conference. There were a lot of people from all over the world. But NGOs tended not to be represented at the conference. Neither did missionaries. Even fair trade was obviously absent. And I wondered about this, and then I began to think about it and understand why. And that is because these civil society groups, with this move towards sustainability, with this challenge to the existing system, are going to have to redefine themselves. and they have yet to learn to redefine themselves, where the indigenous people, the common people who live close to the land, who came to the conference, understood very well why they were there. People were there from all places. We went to a very scientific presentation, which I enjoyed very much. A number of years ago, the UN pointed out that it was important in understanding climate change, and someone needed to look at the oral histories of the North American Indian people. And so they looked at Maya and Hopi and Sioux stories of the past. And the scientific team that was presenting, what they were doing was they were looking at the physical evidence. They documented the stories, and then they looked around the world for physical evidence of whether these stories could be confirmed. It was very interesting because they did, but they also went further as they looked into some of the prophecies of how these things come about. And it was a really interesting presentation. But what was interesting to me as well was that there were all sorts of people from all classes, from all races, from all types that were there listening and understanding and taking part in those discussions. Wonderful opportunity. I gave my presentation, I think, on the third day. It was really great. Again, I had a very mixed group of people to present to. I wanted to talk about three things. The first thing that I wanted to talk about is I wanted to share the experience of Indigenous people in Canada and how colonialism had affected us and how capitalism had affected us and how what a struggle it was to maintain our sense of indigeneity. I also wanted to beg for their help, and I emphasize the word beg. It's very, very important. Canadians, Indigenous Canadians, and new Native Canadians have a very hard time informing ourselves, and we need the help of other people around the world. We need people to come here and tell us how important their lands are to them. We need people to come here and tell us how important it is for us to control the corporations that are registered in this company and what they're doing to people in other lands. We need their voices to help us understand who we are. And that's what I was begging for. I also came there to let them know, if they didn't already, how dangerous Canada is. It's really important for us who do understand that to be able to convey that message, particularly Indigenous people here and other new Native people here who suffer under the false impression that this is a democratic country, that we need to tell others how dangerous this country is. So those were the things that I talked about. And as I said, it was a really, really enjoyable conversation, lots of question and answers afterwards. I had the support of Raul, who was really there in great support. Couple of things that I want to talk about before I finish. The final day was wonderful. We went downtown. We took a bus. It was jam-packed. People were basically sitting on each other's laps, from Ticapaya down to the center of the stadium at Cochabamba. And when we got there, the stadium was packed. There was 40,000 people in the stands and on the field, on the sports field. People were jubilant. They knew that they had accomplished something. That morning or the day before, the sort of rumor had gone around that the world had not even paid any attention. The world media had not paid any attention to Cochabamba. But that didn't matter to the people who were there. They were ready to celebrate because something really, really special had happened. During that entire time, I never heard anyone utter a crossword, make a gesture. There was so much generosity, and that continued right to the last day. It was just the amazing, most amazing event, human event that I've ever been to. The music started, the politicians talked, people stood on chairs and waved flags. I saw the warrior flag, what we call the warrior flag or the unity flag, flying up front among the flags of other nations. It was really, really exciting to be there. At times I was laughing, at times I was crying. It was just amazing, amazing event. We had accomplished something. Just want to talk about a couple of things before I end. I went down also to try to understand Bolivia. Bolivia is considered the second poorest country in the world. I wanted to spend some time visiting some mines and talk to some miners to see what was happening in Bolivia with mining situations. And so Nicole and I went to Potosí, which is the sort of the mining center, one of the big mining centers. It's been a mine for the last 500 years. It's a giant mountain that is full of silver. The Spanish made their wealth off of Potosí. There's 32 Catholic churches in Potosí. But inside the mine, there's El Tío, who represents the devil. And miners go in and they drop their coca leaves for El Tío. They give tobacco and they give some alcohol and they give other gifts because it is the spirits that provide the wealth that comes from the earth, and they have to give the gift to El Tío. The miners were there for life. They started young. They worked through most of their life. And many of them die young, but they work hard, and it's the life that they live, and they create a very fine community around the mines. There are some cooperatives that we wanted to talk to. We didn't really get a chance to spend much time speaking to people about mining cooperatives, but that's a process that's well underway in Bolivia. Then we went back to La Paz, and we took another adventure. We got some horses, and we rode over the ridge toward the east and into the valleys that are below the mountains with the glaciers. The local name for one of the mountains with the glaciers on it is the man who is losing his poncho. And clearly, the people who live in those valleys look up to that mountain every day and every season and every year, and they can see the retreating of the glaciers. And they know that the water that comes out of the ground through the springs that they feed their animals, that they water their animals from, and that they water their fields from, when those glaciers are gone, that water will no longer seep out of the ground and they will have to move away. There are people who live an agricultural life that is totally foreign to the way we live here. They cut their hay and oats and wheat with machetes, and they stook those. There are no machines in the agricultural valleys east of La Paz that till the ground. The people themselves do it. They tend their animals. They look after their families. And what struck me the most was that they're happy and generous and caring people. They would stop and talk to us. The children were really fascinated with the horses because they don't get to see horses very much in that valley. So the kids would come up and pet the horses and we'd have conversations with them. They were contented and generous people, and they also understood very well the predicament that they were in with global warming. We owe it to them, and when we talk about climate debt, that's what climate debt is all about. One of the last things we did was we went to Tiwanaku. It was a wonderful experience. It's one of the oldest urban constructions in the Americas, and I had the opportunity to conduct a pipe ceremony there, and it was one of the greatest experiences that I had, I think, in Bolivia and in a very long time. My partner, Nicole, I looked over at her while the pipe ceremony was going on, and the tears were coming down her face, and we knew we were in a very special place, a place where human beings had had dreams, a civilization that had been the cradle of the civilizations of the world, because most of the glyphs and the work that's done at Tiwanaku is found in other parts of the world, in Europe and Asia and Africa. So we know that the knowledge passed from that area of the world around the world. That was a great experience.
We have been listening to Robert Lovelace, the retired chief of the Ardoc Algonquin First Nation, who was reporting back last week from the World People's Conference on Climate Change that was held in Cochabamba, Bolivia, April 19th to 22nd. And just a couple of highlights in terms of the positions coming out of that conference, which was attended by tens of thousands of people, well, 40,000 there at the end, but guests from over 120 countries. An agreement was reached by participants and delivered on May the 7th to the General Secretary of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, by Bolivian President Evo Morales. Some of the key points were the position in principle that the rights of Mother Earth must be recognized. A number of the speakers at last week's event said that they hadn't really thought about Mother Earth having rights, and that it's something that's very alien to people from a kind of North American capitalist worldview. But that was something that was talked about at great length in Cochabamba during the conference. There was a general agreement that there should be a tribunal, an international climate and environmental justice tribunal, that would be responsible for overseeing commitments and making sure that people are accountable for their actions, and that there be a referendum, a global referendum on targets, emissions targets, and just the way forward for economic and social development, and with all the costs in mind. And so we'll see where these proposals go, but many have described the Cochabamba conference as a game changer, as a necessary counterweight to the power of the rich countries that are responsible for climate change, and that have so far not taken responsibility for cleaning up the problem that we have caused. So again, thank you to the organizers of at Bolivia Solidarity for organizing last week's event so people could hear what happened in Cochabamba, and for allowing us to present this. And we're going to go out with some music. And no, we're going to go straight to Anti-Psychiatry Radio with Don Weitz, and he'll be reporting back from a conference that he was involved with all last weekend, the Psych Out conference held at the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education. So do stay tuned. This is Word of Mouth News on CKLN 88.1 FM.